from KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. 157. That's the number of confirmed coronavirus cases in California reported by state public health officials. And a third person has died of the virus in the state, a woman in her 90s living in a Sacramento County senior living facility. In response to COVID-19, counties across the state are declaring public health emergencies. But what real-world powers do such declarations give local governments? KPCC's Robert Garova has some answers.
James Hodge is Western Region Director with the Network for Public Health Law. He's been watching one place after another declare an emergency.
I mean, California's lit up like a Christmas tree.
Proclaiming a local emergency makes it easier to access state and federal disaster relief. But Hodge says it also lets local governments pursue isolation and quarantine initiatives, among other things.
We can set curfews, we can evacuate premises, we can literally shut down particular assemblies. All of these are within the realm of what's possible.
Emergency declarations also allow for expediting the cancellation of big events, something that usually takes more time for courts to process. And now that there's also a state-level emergency declaration, Hodge says another provision kicks in. It's called licensure reciprocity. That means medical professionals who are licensed out of state can temporarily work in California as if their license was issued here. For the California Report, I'm Robert Garova in Los Angeles.
So far, only two COVID-19 cases have been confirmed in the San Joaquin Valley, one each in Madera and Fresno counties. The people were both aboard cruise ships. But that doesn't mean rural California is off the hook when it comes to the outbreak. Valley Public Radio's Laura Satsui reports.
At least 30 people from Stanislaus to Kern County have been monitored for possible COVID-19 symptoms.
We're doing what's called active monitoring, where we check in with patients every day, either by phone or in person, to see how they're doing and to see if they have any needs that we can help out with while they're sort of isolating themselves at home.
That's Dr. Simon Paul, a public health officer with Madera County. He's hoping to contain the disease by watching at-risk patients closely for 2 weeks. If a case is confirmed, he'll also monitor anyone the patient has had contact with. So far, the risk of getting the virus from someone in the San Joaquin Valley is very low. But Mariposa County Health Director Dr. Eric Sergienko says things could change quickly, even if just a few cases are confirmed.
We would probably run out of the capacity to do really good contact tracing after about 3 or 4 cases.
In the meantime, both health officials say that instead of wiping out the toilet paper aisle, preventative measures like washing hands and disinfecting surfaces are the best ways to protect oneself. For the California Report, I'm Laura Satsui in Fresno.
San Francisco will lease RVs and hotel rooms to quarantine homeless people who may test positive for COVID-19, although there are no reported cases among homeless residents in San Francisco so far. Mayor London Breed says the city will also spend $5 million in emergency funding to pay for cleaning and meal services at shelters and single-room occupancy hotels. Along with the homeless, the mayor says the city is trying to protect seniors and those with underlying health problems by implementing strategies suggested by the Department of Public Health.
There's also people who aren't in our shelters. They're not in our system. And so we have to be prepared to provide the resources for them as well.
There are 14 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in San Francisco. Let's turn now to the outbreak and the economy. Across California, many companies are encouraging their workers to work from home if they're sick or worried about the coronavirus. But workers in the gig economy, like drivers for Lyft or Uber, just can't do that and still earn a living. KQED's Sam Harnett has the story of one driver who's scared to be on the road, but says she has no other choice.
In San Francisco, the streets are quiet, says Lyft and Uber driver Erica Maghetto of Sacramento. But she's prepared for any rides that she does get.
So I have the surgical mask that the doctor gave me today.
Those are for passengers who are coughing. She's also been told by Lyft and Uber to keep her car clean, and you can smell the disinfectant.
I have my Lysol Clean and Fresh kills germs even when diluted and a rag, and then I have my mask that the doctor gave me today that she recommends that I wear, but I'm afraid to wear because I might scare people.
Maghetto's in her late 30s, and she used to be an accountant. She's been driving for 3 years while searching for a steady job. Now she's scared to be on the road because of her health.
My heart condition is called supraventricular tachycardia.
She had surgery 10 years ago.
It's nerve-wracking. I haven't been monitored since 2010. I don't have a primary care practitioner nor cardiologist or specialist that's monitoring me.
Sometimes at night, she folds down the backseat of her car, pulls out a pillow that's tucked into the spare tire cavity, and sleeps there. She's trying to scrape together money to get a new place. She has $18,000 in credit card and car debt.
PayPal wants their money. And I got a reminder from Capital One wants their money today. I just have no choice whatsoever. I'm running myself into financial despair.
Earlier this week, Lyft and Uber announced that they'll pay drivers for up to 14 days once they've been diagnosed with coronavirus or required to self-quarantine. But neither company has stated how much drivers could get compensated. Uber and Lyft drivers aren't alone in this situation. About 30% of all private sector workers in the U.S. have no access to paid sick days. And only about 4% of workers have access to more than 14 paid sick days a year. That's according to the Economic Policy Institute. Elise Gould is an economist there.
When you think about the workers who are living paycheck to paycheck, those are the ones who are least likely to be able to work from home or to have those paid sick days.
Congressional Democrats in D.C. have put forward new legislation to guarantee paid sick time for all workers as a means of containing the coronavirus. But it's not expected to make it past the GOP-controlled Senate. In the meantime, Erica Maghetto worries she's going to run out of options.
When people ask how you're doing, like, it always makes me cry because I appreciate the concern. It's lonely and it's terrible and it's... I've made a promise to myself to at least acknowledge the people on the side of the road asking for money because I'm scared I could be that person.
Right now, with less and less people taking rides, she says the only thing she can do is stay on the road and take whatever she can get. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett in San Francisco.
Let's turn to other news. California's largest utility, Pacific Gas and Electric, has resolved a dispute with the Federal Emergency Management Agency over money the government agency spent helping victims of wildfires caused by the utility. As the California Report's Lily Jamali tells us, FEMA's claim against PG&E was threatening to derail the settlement.
FEMA's decision to drastically reduce its claim from $4 billion to just $1 billion helps clear the way for Northern California wildfire victims to access a $13.5 billion fund set aside for them. Plus, as part of the deal, FEMA falls to the back of the line, giving priority to the claims of 70,000 fire victims. Attorney Gerald Singleton represents 7,000 of them.
I think it means that our clients likely are going to be paid either in full or very close to it.
PG&E entered into bankruptcy protection last year because of its liability for wildfires caused by its equipment. It's attempting to exit from Chapter 11 by a state-mandated deadline this summer. For the California Report, I'm Lily Jamali.
California voters have a pretty good track record of passing school bond measures. But while there are still millions of ballots left to count, it appears voters have rejected Proposition 13. It was the $15 billion school bond on last week's March primary ballot. As Katie Orr reports, some are wondering if voters confused it with another Proposition 13, the landmark property tax cutting measure from 1978.
In California politics, few issues are as notorious and as controversial as Prop 13.
Proposition 13, it's called, and it's an absolute flat ban on how much property tax they can charge homeowners.
In California, the numbering of propositions restarts every 10 years. But even decades later, Prop 13 still resonates with voters, so much so that Democratic Assemblyman Patrick O'Donnell has introduced a measure that would retire the number 13 from being used in proposition titles. O'Donnell was a big supporter of the school bond that appears to have failed during the March primary. He says things were initially looking good for the measure.
Historically, California voters have supported statewide school bonds. I'm very confident we are on our way to victory until it was entitled Proposition 13.
It's too early to know exactly why the bond went down. Anti-tax sentiment, voters overwhelmed with news about the presidential primary and coronavirus may have figured in. But O'Donnell says, regardless, the number 13 has got to go.
And quite frankly, I think all legislators, should they value democracy, would wish to see that there be no more voter confusion on any ballot measure. And the fact of the matter is that Proposition 13 this year did create a lot of confusion for voters, and we should act to clear that up.
O'Donnell's effort does have some support from the other end of the political spectrum. John Kupal is president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, the backers of the original 13. He says his group has made repeated efforts to retire the number.
Proposition 13 is the most iconic initiative, not only in California, but nationwide. And so when people hear Prop 13, they have very specific concepts of what that is. And so anytime it pops up on the ballot again, it is bound to cause confusion.
Adding to the confusion, voters will get to weigh in on reforming the original Prop 13 in November if a ballot measure qualifies. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
And that is the California Report for Wednesday, March 11th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Saul Gonzalez. Have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. Personal Capital, offering financial planning with registered advisors and serving over 2 million people with online financial tools, personalcapital.com. And Stanford Healthcare, offering every kind of care for every kind of patient. Learn more at stanfordhealthcare.org.